Okay, as back about a few years ago, we started on the divided kingdom. We had a class on the divided kingdom, and we found out how the kingdom split after Solomon's death. And as we studied that, we came across a prophet named Isaiah. And he prophesied probably around 730 to 690 B.C., sometime in that period. Hezekiah was the king of the southern kingdom. So when Isaiah was living, he also prophesied concerning the northern kingdom, and we see them taken in captivity by Assyria in about 722 B.C. Isaiah would have been a witness to that. Hezekiah would have been a witness to that. The Jews in the southern kingdom would have seen what happened to their kinsmen, the 10 tribes that lived in the north. They would have saw firsthand, because Samaria and Jerusalem was not that far apart. And they would have saw the suffering that went on in that city, and the suffering was great. And they was taken into a terrible captivity by the Assyrians, and then the Assyrians moved other people in to occupy that area. And that's how we come up with the Samaritans as the years go on. But what's interesting is Isaiah makes some prophecies. Turn over to Isaiah, the 41st chapter. And this is, you know, being prophesied around 700 B.C. And these events that will happen is happening about 538 B.C. So, you know, there's 160 years difference, give or take a few years. But in Isaiah 41, chapter 41, verse 2, Isaiah says, "Who raised up the righteous man from the east, called him to his foot, gave the nations before him, and made him rule over kings. He gave them as the dust to his sword, and as driven stubble to his bow." Here he's describing someone coming from the east as a righteous man. Then we go to Isaiah 44:28. And just here, think about how many years this was prophesied before it happened. And he talked about the righteous men from the east. Then verse 28 of chapter 44 of Isaiah, it says, "That saith of Cyrus, he is my shepherd and shall perform all my pleasure, even saying to Jerusalem, thou shalt be built, and to the temple thy foundation shall be laid." And that's talking about Cyrus. And at that time, the Medes and Persians was really just a little dot in world history. When he prophesied this, Assyria was the dominant power. And between Assyria and the Medes and the Persians, there was going to be the Babylonian Empire. Now, continue in Isaiah 45, verse 1 through verse 4. It says, this is Isaiah speaking in, "Thus saith the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have beholden to subdue nations before him, and I will loose the loins of kings to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. I will go before thee and make their crooked places straight. I will break in pieces the gates of brass and cut in asunder the bars of iron. And I will give thee the treasures of darkness and hidden riches of secret places, that thou mayest know that I, the Lord, who call thee by thy name, am the God of Israel. For Jacob my servant's sake, and Israel mine elect, I have called thee by thy name. I have surnamed thee, though thou hast not known me." What's interesting, how was Babylon taken? They had bars up, they had gates, didn't they? And they diverted the water flow. The Medes and the Persians diverted the water flow. And we talked back in Daniel how that they was parting that night, and Belshazzar was thinking about all the great things he had done, excelling himself above God, and we see the handwriting on the wall back of 3 months ago. We talked about Daniel, and here it talks about in verse 2, "I will break in pieces the gates of brass." Look how specific Isaiah gets in something that was going to occur 160 years approximately from that time. So we see that Isaiah prophesied about these events that we're getting ready to see in the book of Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther. But also what's interesting, go to Jeremiah 20, to the book of Jeremiah. In Jeremiah 29, this is 25, let's go for chapter 25, 12 first. Jeremiah 25, 12, Jeremiah is prophesying around 615, maybe 620, all the way to 586 when the third captivity. And Jeremiah said, prophesy day and night at the temple. But Jeremiah says in Jeremiah 25, 12, and it shall come to pass when 70 years are accomplished that I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, saith the Lord, for their iniquity. And the land of the Chaldeans, I will make it perpetual desolation. Pretty clear what he's talking about. He's not talking of his prophecies about Cyrus, but his prophecy is saying how long the children of Israel will be in Babylon from their first captivity. And it's interesting. Go to chapter 29, verse 10. Jeremiah just didn't say this once or twice because he wants the people to understand. There was people coming and going to the temple all the time. So he's just not going to say it one time because people won't hear it. And the other thing is the people that heard it the first time, they might forget about it. But he reiterates that in chapter 29, verse 10, for thus saith the Lord, that after 70 years be accomplished at Babylon, I will visit you and perform my good word toward you in causing you to return to this place. So we see that here again. In that chapter, he prophesies again about how long they're going to be in captivity in Babylon. 70 years. Now, how did Cyrus find out about all this? As we know, that Nebuchadnezzar conquered the Israelites, the city of Jerusalem, and then there was the several kings after him, and then Cyrus and Darius go in and they destroy the Babylonians. How would Cyrus know what God's plan was for him? So hold on to thinking about that. Look in 2 Chronicles 36, verse 22 through 23. Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of the Lord, okay, remember the word of the Lord, back in Jeremiah, says, thus saith the Lord, that the word of the Lord spoken by the mouth of Jeremiah might be accomplished, the Lord stirred up in the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom, and put it also in writing, saying, thus saith Cyrus, king of Persia, all the kingdoms of the earth hath the Lord God of heaven given me, and he hath charged me to build him a house in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Who is there among you of all his people? The Lord his God be with him, and let him go up. So where did Cyrus know about did Cyrus know about these prophecies? How would he have known about these prophecies? Could be if he read Jeremiah. Go over to Daniel. You know, we talked about the divided kingdom several years ago. Then we studied the book of Isaiah. And then just a few months ago, we studied the book of Daniel. So if we go to Daniel, the 9th chapter, verse 2. And we talked about this back in the Daniel class. Daniel 9, let's read verse 1 because it gives us the time period. In the first year of Darius, the king of Ahasuerus of the seed of the Medes, which was made king over the realm of the Chaldeans, in the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, understood by books the number of the years whereof the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah the prophet that he had accomplished 70 years in his desolation of Jerusalem. So we talked about then, back in Daniel, Daniel knew about the prophecy of Jeremiah, didn't he? Okay. Was Daniel in a position of great authority in the kingdom of Darius? After Darius, and it seems like Darius and Cyrus might have been co-kings, and some people say that Darius maybe ruled, they shared the rule together, but then finally Cyrus became the stronger of the two. They ruled together. Did anything outstanding happen that would have affected Darius about Daniel? Remember when Daniel was in great power in Nebuchadnezzar's realm, but also did he not become in great power in Darius's realm in the first year? And he was put in charge of a lot of different things. And what did those people that was jealous of Daniel, what charges did they bring against Daniel? Yeah, they came, they made a proclamation that the king said you should not pray for a period of time. And we said Daniel went in his house. And we also said those men knew about that because they knew that Daniel prayed how many times a day? 3 times a day. And they knew the time, okay? Daniel had a time and he was going to pray. And the people around Daniel, all those other rulers that ruled with him, they knew that. And they had they snookered the king in coming up with this decree, didn't they? Nebuchadnezzar did that in back in the chapter 2 or 3 with Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. But this is a different kingdom here. So what happened to Daniel? Because he disobeyed the king, what was the decree to someone that disobeyed the king? Thrown in the lion's den. Now, did the lions eat Daniel up? And then what did the king do to the ones that charged Daniel? First of all, when Daniel was sent to the lion's den, do you think Darius was concerned? Did you think he realized what those other leaders had done to him? He stayed up all night worrying about it, didn't he? When we looked over there. So when he comes up that next morning and Daniel's still in the lion's den and he's alive, would that not impress us? If you go to the zoo today and someone falls in the lion's den, And you know, these lions, they kept them hungry. So they were, maybe if you go to the zoo, they feed them, okay? But still, if you go into with wild animals, you might not come out alive, would you? In fact, he cast all these men and their families and their kids in the lion's den, and what did the lions do? You know, somebody could have said, these could have said to the king, well, the lions, you fed them, they're hungry, they're full. So he throws them in the lion's den, and was the lions hungry? That's right. They pounced upon him. Yeah, they. But now, if you're the king, and there's Daniel there, and you've seen him survive, that was going to be an execution. Would that not open your eyes and you'd stand back? So when Daniel goes in and says, because in Daniel 9:2 it said when he understood by the books and the number of years, it says he was the word of the Lord by Jeremiah the prophet. He had the book of Jeremiah. And when he goes into Cyrus and says, look here, what the God that delivered me from the lion's den, look what his prophet said about the number of years we're going to be in captivity. Also, if he had the book of Jeremiah, would it be obvious that he might have the book of Isaiah? And he goes over to Isaiah 45 and Isaiah 44, and it talks over there in that one passage where it comes from the east. How did the Medes and Persians come from? Did they come from the north, the south, the east, or west? They came from the east. They was east of Babylon. So Daniel would show him there. Look what the God that delivered me out of the lion's den, look, he identified you, Cyrus. He mentions you by name. He says you're the anointed. You know? Now, was Cyrus a true worshiper of the one God? No, he had other gods. And you know, different kings did different things. The Assyrians would move people from their homeland and would move other people in because, let me ask you, do you fight harder for the land that you're a citizen of or a land that you're not a citizen of? Yeah, you fight hard for your family, your state, for those things, because that's where you're from. But the Assyrians would move people around. Well, when Cyrus comes in, even though it was a policy that he moved people back. And so as we go into chapter 1, we're going to see all those different things, what Cyrus is doing. But I'm sure that Daniel is showing that. Go to Zechariah, the last verse I want to see. Go to Zechariah chapter 1, verse 12, because here's another prophet that says in verse 12, "Then the angel of the Lord answered and said, O Lord of hosts, how long wilt thou not have mercy on Jerusalem and on the cities of Judah, against which thou hast indignation these 70 years? Zechariah says it's 70 years. So we should not be surprised that God's prophets proclaimed that before they went in captivity, and after they went in captivity, there's going to be 70 years. And Daniel understood that. So the name of Ezra means help. That's what his name is. It means help. He was a priest. He was a scribe. He had studied the law. He knew the law. And that's going to become important because God's going to want to send somebody to Jerusalem that knew the law to instruct the Israelites on what they should do. The purpose of the book of Ezra is to record 2 returns. There's going to be a lot of time period in Ezra. We're going to see in verse 1, in the first year of Cyrus, that's about 538 B.C., and then Ezra goes to Jerusalem about 452, 454. So that's almost 100 years that we're going to see the history of the Israelites, what's going on here. God delivers his people 2 times. And the other thing is, who can believe this? This is to show the Israelites and to show us as Gentiles how God remembers his people. Yeah, he punished them. If you go back in Deuteronomy, Moses tells the people, if you don't do these things, God's going to take you into captivity. You've got to obey God. You had the law. You are responsible for that. And if they didn't, they were going to go into captivity. And they went in captivity for disobeying God. So we start off about 538 B.C. with the first return. And when we go to the book of Nehemiah, Nehemiah goes to Jerusalem in 444 B.C. And as we go through that book, he's there 12 years, which puts it 432 B.C. He goes back to the king. And then in the last chapter, he comes back to Jerusalem. So was it 430? So this time period of these 3 books will be about 538 to about 430 B.C. Now, we've talked about Ezra. We've talked about Nehemiah a little bit. What other book we're going to talk about? Esther, right? Esther happens, Artaxerxes was the king when Ezra and when Nehemiah went back to Jerusalem. There was a king before him with this Ahasuerus, and I might be pronouncing his name wrong, but Ahasuerus or whatever. But he's the king when the book of Esther is the history of. And it's interesting in Esther, what was Esther known for? Why did she become queen? Beauty, wasn't it? It wasn't because of her intellect. I mean, she might have been the smartest woman in the whole kingdom. But because of some rash moments, the king had a drunken feast for a long time, and he got rid of the queen because she would not come in. And some people said that he wanted to show her beauty, all her beauty, and she refused to do that. And then, of course, all his advisors get together and said, you know, if you let this get away, just think of all the women in the country, they're all going to revolt against their husbands. Well, I don't think so. If he asked her to do that, she had a reason to disobey him. But anyway, him and this king was pretty ruthless, okay? He wasn't a good guy. Okay, so he gets deposed of Vashti. So they say, well, go out and find somebody else. And they, I guess, had a beauty contest, and they go out. And they just, if you're beautiful, they take you, okay? And you can go back, we can look at Saddam and his sons and what they did if there was beautiful women. They had their way with that because they were the king, okay? They could get to do whatever they want to. So here she goes because of her beauty. But it's interesting, who's behind all this? God's behind all this. Remember Daniel going to captivity as a young boy, a teenager? And he refused to eat of the king's meat. Was God with him? Yes. And what does he end up being? Second to the king, Nebuchadnezzar, right? And then Nebuchadnezzar dies, and we see that those chapters, it looks like he falls out of favor with the kings that come after Nebuchadnezzar. And we see the night of the drunken feast, that the queen mother remembers Daniel. There was that handwriting on the wall. What does it mean? Go to Daniel. And Daniel's probably 90 years old. And offers Daniel the throne, you know. But what good is the throne if it's 7 o'clock at night, and by 12 midnight, the kingdom's over with, right? What good is that? Okay, Daniel understood that. But then the new regime comes in, and who's placed in power? Daniel's placed in power, okay? God is placing Daniel where Daniel needs to be. Ezra, he goes to the king, Artaxerxes, and he comes back. They need leadership in Jerusalem. A few years later, Nehemiah's the cupbearer to the king, a very important position. He's down one day. If you're a cupbearer to the king, you better have a good disposition, because one way you get rid of the kings is through poisoning him, okay? When his countenance was down, he was in pretty bad shape. But the king loved him and sends him back to Jerusalem. And we know everything that Nehemiah did. Same thing with Esther. She goes to be next to the king. And we will see that the king, she might have been his wife, but the king had a harem too, okay? Think about her life, how different it would be from the way God wants marriage to be. She had a husband that wasn't a good guy, okay? But God placed her there to save her people. And so we'll talk about that when we get to the book of Ezra. But one thing, I got to give Justin thanks for this, because I'm not pretty good with PowerPoint, but I can push the button. Here's the kings of Persia. We're talking about Cyrus the Great, because this is the kings that we're going to see through these three books. Then there's Cambyses, I guess. He reigned from 530 to 522. Here's Darius, 522 to 486. There's Esther's husband, the king. He reigned from 486 to 464. So that's when the book of Esther is taking place. Here's Artaxerxes. So really, the book of Ezra goes from Cyrus the Great all the way to Artaxerxes. It covers all those kings in that time period. Esther takes place in 486 to 464. And remember the decree that the king made that anybody, the Gentiles, could kill any of the Jews for that one day or the couple of days. They could take everything of their possessions. That's happened in that time period in Jerusalem. Because they ruled Jerusalem, that would have taken, they would have, the Gentiles around the city of Jerusalem would have the right, according to the decree, the proclamation, to do what? To kill the Israelites and take all their possessions. So that's the five kings. Nehemiah's, when his takes place in, like I said, 444. So now, there's some events that's going to happen. The decree of Cyrus that we just talked about, 538 B.C., then we see the return. We're going to see that in chapter 1, 537. We're going to see the temple is going to begin in 536. And what's interesting, not only did Cyrus let the Israelites go back to Jerusalem, he also gave them a credit card. Right? They could get wood from the different places. They collect gold from certain people. And that would be the reconstruction of Jerusalem was going to be at the expense of the kingdom. How great would that be? Not only God's providing for them. We see God's providence in all these things. And it would cost a lot of money. But they've got the decree, the proclamation from the king that they could take these things. So the temple construction begins in 536. We'll see that as we go to the first chapters of Ezra. You know, we're not going to study the book of Haggai, but Haggai is prophesying about 520 there in Jerusalem. We always need to remember God is always raising up prophets to talk to his people, because it's important for his people to know the law, to know what's going on. Zechariah, he prophesies. We read over there Zechariah 1:12. He prophesies from 520 to 515, there again in Jerusalem. They're prophesying together. The temple completed 515 B.C. How long did it take to complete that temple? 536 to 515, what, 21 years? Yeah. Did the people, they really wanted to do that in the beginning. Could you see the excitement leaving Babylon, going to Jerusalem to rebuild the city? They're leaving captivity. They're going to be free. And they get to Jerusalem and they get a good start. But what happened? Do we ever do that? Do we ever get a good start? And for whatever reason, we run out of steam. I think it was Haggai or Zechariah, one of them said to the people, the temple stalled. It stopped. Okay? And there was reasons for that, as we'll see. Going back to those kings, from 538 B.C. to Artaxerxes in 444, all the people, the Gentiles, all those people that the Assyrians brought in to replace the northern kingdom, they constantly tried to get the Israelites to stop the building. We're going to see in the chapter pretty soon, they wanted to help. Okay, we're going to see what's his name said to them about wanting their help at the temple. Okay, they wanted to help, but we'll see why they said no to them. Okay, there was a lot of opposition for almost 100 years. In fact, in Nehemiah, one time when he's sad, he said he has found out the walls are broken down and the gates have been burned. Was he talking about when Nebuchadnezzar came in? Or was he talking about the opposition of the people there in 450 or 448 B.C.? There was so much opposition, most commentators, and I believe too, that the people around Jerusalem was burnt those gates, would come up at night. In the book of Nehemiah, it said the people worked with a tool in their hand and a spear in their other hand because the people around them told them they're going to kill them. Okay? They just want to kill Nehemiah. Okay? So, and they wrote, we're going to see this. They, in the book of Ezra, they wrote letters back to these other kings that we're talking about. They wrote letters and said, check on this Jerusalem. If you check the history, Jerusalem is a rebellious city. Did Jerusalem rebel against Babylon? Against Nebuchadnezzar? Yeah, that was true. They did rebel. But that was back in 606 and 597 and 586 B.C. Okay? That tells you something about people sometimes. Will they misuse facts? And will they write letters to authority sometimes and misuse facts? I mean, you're the king over there in Shushan or whatever, and you start looking through the records that was, you know, if it's 530 B.C. and you read the records 100 years ago, 80 years ago, that Nebuchadnezzar said, yeah, that king, the city revolted against me, you know? That would be a true statement. But what are they doing now? So they're misusing these facts, and they wrote several letters. So the temple's completed 515. The book, the events of Esther is 483 to 473. The decree of Artaxerxes, that's when Ezra goes back, 458. I think I said something different earlier. It's 458. That's when Ezra goes back. And here's the return under Ezra. The decree of Artaxerxes in 446. And that's another decree. Of, in 444, that's when Nehemiah goes back. So tonight, I kind of wanted to show how, like a broad introduction, how these three books fit together and the history that's going on at that time. And I think, let's go on to Ezra verses chapter 1. And David, could you read verses 1 to 4 for us?
Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, in order to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, the Lord stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, so that he sent a proclamation throughout all his kingdom, and also put it in writing, saying, thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, the Lord, the God of heaven, has given me all the kingdoms of the earth, and he has appointed me to build him a house in Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Whoever there is among you, of all his people, may his God be with him. Let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and rebuild the house of the Lord, the God of Israel. He is the God who is in Jerusalem. And every survivor at whatever place he may live, let the men of that place support him with silver and gold, with goods and cattle, together with a freewill offering to the house of God, which is in Jerusalem.
Can you imagine Cyrus, who is the most powerful king at this time of all the world? He's defeated all these other kings. He's the most powerful person in the world, saying, referring to Jeremiah, in the proclamation, he references the book of Jeremiah. It says God stirred his spirit up. And I think he did this through Daniel. Okay, Daniel showed him, I think, those prophecies, and he's the one, he's Cyrus. Makes a proclamation throughout the whole kingdom, everywhere. And he also not only made a proclamation, but he put it in writing so that they would not only have the word of mouth, but as these proclamations went out to the whole world, to any Israelite that would want to go back to Jerusalem, he'd have it in his hand. And he talks about verse 2, the Lord God of heaven. And I do believe that he did not, to him, the God of heaven was another God, but the God of heaven might have been more powerful than the other gods, because here again, Daniel had been delivered from the lion's den. I don't think there's any other person, I know there isn't, is there any other person that's been delivered, has Baal delivered anybody from the lion's den, or any of these other gods, Ashdod and all these other gods, but he has done that. And he also charged me. You know, he's saying that the God of Israel has charged me, has told me to do this in Judah. And he says in verse 3, who wants to go back? May his God be with him. Go back and build the house. And then also in verse 4, what does he give them in verse 4? Gold, silver, animals, beasts. Beside the freewill offering of the house of God. Now, these guys that go back, and gals that goes back to Jerusalem, really, he's giving them a building permit, isn't he? Today, if you want to build something, and it could be a house, or it could be an office building, or it could be a big office tire, okay? We're working on the stadium downtown, okay? Had to get a building permit for that stadium, right? But if you get a building permit from the king, is anybody going to say, hey, this is not right? We can't. We're not going to honor that, okay? When you work on that stadium downtown, when there's a problem, there's people they can go to that wants to see that built, right? Sometimes potential problems just kind of disappear, you know, because you go to the right guy, okay? Because it's important. So he's got a building permit from the king, and he's also got a credit card. Anything you need, see to it that these Israelites will go ahead and build this temple, build the walls. Is not God taking care of his people? God's taking care of his people. Okay, let's go down to verses 5 and 6. Joe, you want to read verses 5 and 6 for us? Who's going back? What does it say here?
The heads of the father's house.
Okay. Why is only Judah and Benjamin mentioned here?
That's who last occupied.
That's right. Remember, the northern kingdom was taken into captivity by the Assyrians back there in 722 BC. So Judah and Benjamin, that was taken. And the priest and the Levites and all them whose spirit God had raised up to go build the house. And we see again, they're strengthened with all these physical blessings. You know, the outline of chapter 1 is verses 1 to 4 is the edict, the proclamation that Cyrus makes. We see the response of the people in verses 5 and 6. And then let's, Erica, why don't you read verses 7 to 11 for us? When Nebuchadnezzar came in and took Jerusalem, what did he take with him? Not only did he take the people, but what else did he take? Yeah, and where was these things at, a lot of them? It was in the temple. Okay, and remember that night that Belshazzar has that drunken feast? What's he drinking out of? Yeah, he called his people, go get these cups and these basins and these whatever from that we took from Jerusalem. And could you just see the pride that he had? Because we're going to use these vessels to put wine in and to have a big party. Is he respecting those vessels, those holy things? Think of his pride. I mean, that handwriting on the wall. And it said on Daniel that his knees were shaking. He was scared to death. Because there's never been, it's never been recorded anywhere in the history of mankind that there's ever been a handwriting on the wall. This was a miracle. And then Daniel comes to him and says, you're found wanting. Your kingdom will be taken tonight. Don't know what time it was. Was it 7 o'clock? Was it 8 o'clock? And was it night, midnight? Or night, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning? But just think if someone comes to you and says, you've only got a few hours to live because of your pride, because of your disobedience, because you've used these vessels of God in an unholy manner. Okay? Look, just look at the number here that says in verse 11, 5,400 different vessels of gold and of silver. Is Cyrus a generous ruler here? Would these things be worth a lot of money? Could they be melted down and used for different things? Yeah. But they would, you know, a king has to finance his kingdom, right? Has to pay an army and has to do different things. These things could have been melted down. Do you think maybe Daniel had something to say about that when he was talking to him about what Jeremiah says, the 70 years, and when he says about Isaiah saying, Cyrus, you're the man. You're the one that's going to, God has selected you. So here we see in chapter 1, the proclamation, the response of the people, and the return of the vessels here in verses 7 and 11. It gives us a history. Now, we've only got a few minutes. We won't take the, if anybody wants to read chapter 2 with all those names, they can. We're not going to read all the names. But it identifies the people. In verse 1 it says, now these are the children of the province that went up out of captivity of those which had been carried away, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away into Babylon and came again unto Jerusalem and Judah, every one unto his city. You know, sometimes we think, well, these are just names, okay? But these are names of people. And it identifies different groups. In the beginning verses, they're just ordinary people. They're just like maybe you and me. And then in verse 40, there was Levites. In verse 41, there were singers. Verse 42, there was porters. Verse 43, there was Nethinims, and I believe those helped the Levites in their service. Verse 55, the children of Solomon's servants. So evidently, Solomon lived many, many, many years ago. But evidently, there was people that were Solomon's servants that was still there in Jerusalem that was taken captive by Nebuchadnezzar. They're going back. Verse 61, the children of the priest that was going. And then what is interesting is in verse 64 it says, the whole congregation together were 42,303. 42,360. Then verse 65 adds this, besides their servants and their maids, of whom there were 7,337, and there were among them 200 singing men and singing women. Their horses were 736. Their mules 245. Their camels 435. Their asses 6,720. When you add all these people together, it seems like there was 50,000 people that is leaving Babylon. Now, one commentator said that they didn't leave all at once. I don't know. The scriptures kind of say that numbers them and kind of numbers them all leaving at once, but I'll leave that up to you, whatever you think. Would it take a lot of courage? How many miles was it from Babylon to Jerusalem, roughly? I think a direct route was like 700, but you had to go. 800 or 900 miles. If this is 50-some thousand people, you know, out here at, I guess it's now called Cardinal Stadium, out there at Cardinal Stadium, you got about 55,000. That's a lot of people, isn't it? And if they're going on a trip like this, you know, you got, they only have young people? No, because when they get back to Jerusalem, we're going to see that when they laid the foundation, like 536, they laid the foundation. When they laid the foundation, they was excited. They was on fire, okay? And it said some of the people that was born in Babylon, they was excited about it. But what's the people that was older, what did they do?
They cried,
not because they was unhappy, but it wasn't like the temple was that Solomon built, okay? That was a grandiose temple, okay? So they had to be older, because if they came in the last Exodus, which had been 586 B.C., and it's now 536 B.C., that's 50 years. And for them to remember what the temple looked like, was they maybe 10 years old, 15 years old, you had 50 and 10 and 15, they're 65, 70 years old. How would you, even if you're young today, and we got a lot of younger people in here, we got a lot of people with gray hair too, would you want to start out on a 800, 900 mile journey walking or riding a mule or riding a horse? And you probably maybe get 7 or 8 miles a day, because you gotta once you have breakfast, you gotta break up camp, you gotta put everything away, and then you gotta go your distance, and then before nighttime you gotta break everything down and get your tent up. And you probably had people going out in front of the group getting food. Where are you going? You don't go to McDonald's for food, you know. And a lot of Israelites didn't go back. When we saw over here, where does it say this? Where does it say they're servants? I missed it somewhere. Okay, yeah, what verse? Verse 5, yeah. 65? That's right. Besides their servants and their maids. Let me ask you, does poor people have servants and maids? Who has servants and maids? Rich people. You know, the Israelites, remember Jeremiah said this too? Go to Babylon. You're going to be there 70 years. You go to Babylon and you marry, you prosper, and God was with the Israelites in Babylon. But the thing of it is, some of those Israelites that was prospering, would it be hard to leave your business in Babylon if it's successful to go back to Jerusalem and go that journey? Would that not be a test of your faith to do that? But anyway, we'll pick up with the last part of chapter 2 and go into chapter 3 and hopefully 4 next week.